Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times, Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Welcome, Manny.
Oh, yeah. Hey, fella, where can you skateboard in this town? The streets are so shitty. The sidewalks are so shitty.
He says we'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised because, yeah, the streets are bad. But, like, literally, like, every other street is... So they're paving something in the town. So there's...
Really?
Okay, so you're picking and choosing.
Yeah. Gotta get it while it's fresh.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's like...
Before they collapse into the earth.
Right, right, right.
And the streets start to flood.
Yes. Yeah. We had the big... boil water order in my neighborhood because they had the 48-inch water main broke on Claiborne Avenue right in front of Hit and Run Liquor and Chicken and Watermelon Restaurant.
So, best wings in the city, I'm told.
Yeah, I hear good things about that place. Well, I like both of those things. So, but yeah, man, seeing that neighborhood, it was flooding people's cars. There was so much water.
Good.
It was crazy. And I woke up to a notice on my sink saying that there was a boil water advisory in place. But
third world, baby.
Yeah,
third
yeah. World. Well, yep. That's aspirational. Where, you know, they used to talk about the third world and proud of it bumper sticker. No, third world. This is a failed state. Third world is aspirational. We're hoping to get up to that status.
Third and a half, fourth.
Third world countries, the kids know how to read and write.
Right, exactly.
You know, they know the arithmetic and
stuff like that.
And down here, they can't even do that. Yeah,
yeah. They don't have as much fun as we do, though, to be honest.
Yeah. Probably true. Anyway, but that's all over. The water main, the pressure has been restored.
The street, you're not going to be able to go down Claiborne for weeks.
No, that's going to be closed. Yeah. You have to find alternate routing there.
Yeah.
That's a tragedy.
Yeah, well, I gave up on Claiborne years ago because it's always like that. And even when the street is working, the lights don't work at Louisiana Avenue, and that causes its own nightmare
scenario. Those are just for show. Those don't really work. Well, decorative.
People, then you get those intersections where it's like four lights in a row and in going in two directions, and people try to work that as a four-way stop. It's impossible. Nobody can figure it out. Anyway, so we're back, Manny. We had Mardi Gras week off. So how was your Mardi Gras? Did you do anything?
I went to the Carey's house for maybe like 30 minutes, and then I left.
Okay.
And I didn't go out for Mardi Gras at all. It's just like you've seen one parade, you've seen them all.
Yeah. It's more the fellowship, the
being. And that whole St. Anne thing, I went to that a couple years ago, and I didn't get it. It's just like, this is fun? Just watching, standing around watching these people?
I want to do Mardi Gras with you.
Yeah, you should.
He's got the spirit.
Yeah, you know? What I realized this Mardi Gras is usually there's always people dying. I've always said this, Mardi Gras kills.
Yeah, but not
but
this
now,
year.
No, this year they're angry writers and people.
Yeah.
Angry.
That is disappointing.
And I saw a lot on the social media there that there was a lot of people fighting.
Huh.
On the route.
Really?
I saw tons of footage of people fighting, because people are claiming their land.
That's no good.
It's
not what it's about.
Yeah, no, it's not what it's about, man. I hate that with the tents and the ladders that are all chained together. It destroys the family atmosphere.
Not what it's about.
No. It's supposed to everybody be together and everybody gets to move around. And
no, not in today's age because we're so divided.
It's tough, man.
You know, everyone's divided.
Yeah, no shit.
The secret is to find a really... cute, good-looking kid, stage yourself right in front of them or near them and intercept.
Oh, what's them. Oh really? You're still trying to get beads?
That's the only way.
That's the only way
people like us are going to get anywhere.
Yeah,
guys like us, come on.
The only reason I put my hand up at a parade is to keep the beads from hitting me in the face. I don't want to actually catch anything.
Because they're angry riders. They're throwing them hard.
The best way to get it thrown at you is to look away.
Well, yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah, no. But I will put my hand up just as a parrying maneuver,
put my hand up to flip them off.
Okay.
That That's works, what too, I I've do. Heard.
All right. You know, because I don't want your fucking Chinese beads who pollute our city.
And they call that the LaToya, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know what they call that. Whatever happened to LaToya?
She seems
like a good person.
I don't know.
She'd be fun to Mardi Gras with.
Slinked off. I don't know. Well, somebody thought so, but to each his own.
She's busy in court all day.
Sure.
You know, they're doing that thing. But the only thing, I didn't go out there at all. I didn't want to deal with it. It's just, you know, to me, it's like you've seen one parade, you've seen them all. Mm-hmm. And I'm not from here, so I really don't care, you know. But I did notice I was at home, and I went out and I looked out my front door on Mardi Gras Day, and there was this Uber driver who had parked kind of like right on our street, right in front of my house, and he's just parked there. And he starts washing his car. He's got this towel, and he's wiping down the inside of his interior, and he's doing the window.
I admire that.
Little detailing.
He's doing the windows,
I like that.
And he's doing the doors and the front and everything like that. And it's like for a half hour, he's really going at it.
Wow.
You know, because he's got to make it, because I'm sure he's busy that day.
I commend him.
You know?
I love that.
And then after this half hour, he gets in his car, and this is crazy going nuts. I'm watching him this whole time. He gets in his car after doing all his cleaning, and he whips out this huge bottle of vodka and just starts chugging it. Yes. He just starts chugging it.
Huh.
Yes.
Starts chugging it and puts it down, and then he pulls away. And it's like, well, I'm not going to hire that guy for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know how you wash your car, but...
Yeah, well...
You got to give yourself a reward, is that what you're saying?
Sort of earned it, didn't he?
Yeah, right.
I usually pay people to wash my car.
Okay.
You know, but I thought that was crazy, you know, and, you know, good for him. He's enjoying Mardi Gras while working at the same time.
Yeah.
You
killing
know,
two birds with one stone.
Yeah, so it's over. I don't know what happened to you. I didn't go out there. I don't know if you did anything.
You know, it's my son had ACL surgery right at the beginning of the Friday before, or 10 days before. So we kind of kept it low key this year, you know. Did went and saw the Muses parade, took the streetcar down there, had a car pre-stage.
Now, Muses is the lesbian parade, right?
Well, it's a ladies' parade.
Oh, it's a ladies'.
I'm not sure what...
Is
what
it the, LGBTQ high-five parade?
You know, it's. I think it's take all comers, man.
They're the ones who have the ducks.
No, they have the shoes.
And the ducks.
Okay.
But they have those floats that look
they
like
ducks.
They
do have a float that's ducks. You're right.
You're right,
and
yeah.
They throw some beads that have the ducks.
Right.
Yeah, but it's mostly the shoes. That's what everybody seems
to
want
to get. I don't understand that. Why would you want one shoe? You can't wear just one shoe.
Right.
You got to wear both shoes.
Yeah, maybe you got to wait till next year to get the other shoe.
You know.
And hope you get a right and a left.
If the shoe fits,
right,
as they
there
say.
Yeah, there you go. There you
I
go.
Don't know.
So other than that, I went to the Toth Parade. My son actually went to that. The one that goes on Magazine Street there. It starts way uptown, Nashville or so. It's a very low-key parade anyway. And then Mardi Gras Day, we walked over to Claiborne Avenue near my house and saw where the truck floats line up.
Oh, God.
And they have like 200 truck floats out there.
They have a lot of them.
Lined up. And since my kids were little, they've gone out there and they like to watch that. And so since my son was in the wheelchair, we took him out there.
And left him there. So walk on.
He got to
walk on.
He got to enjoy another parade.
It's a heroic,
heroic
image.
Low impact. Yeah. No, I got photographs. No, it was a scene. Yeah, we had our lawn chairs out there on the neutral ground. It was very pleasant. And then I went down to went and saw Michael D's made an appearance down there. I saw the Carries down there. And
now, is Michael still banging your sister?
Well, I mean, they're still dating.
Okay. So you don't know if they're banging, though.
I imagine. I mean, we don't talk about that, but, you know, they're both adults, so, yeah, they have an adult relationship.
Okay.
I had missed her. I didn't get there till later, so she and her daughters had already, they'd gone to the early parades, like you're saying, the St. Anne, the whatever goes on down there, saw all those, and they had already... hightailed it out of there, headed for the hills, as they say. But I did see Michael. I saw your wife briefly as I was coming in. She was, were ships passing in the night there. And,
yeah,
and
she goes to that shit. I don't want to deal with it.
Right, right.
She goes with her friends.
Anyway, all that's behind us now.
Good.
I'm taking off for New York. They have a big, huge snowstorm going on. I'm driving up into that, playing there. Playing there on Sunday, playing Western, you know, just west of the city on Saturday night. We'll have to see. We got to see what's going to happen here.
You think you are?
Well, we're going.
That's your plan.
We're
going
to make every attempt. You know, the show must go on, Aaron. You understand that.
You got to show up to get paid.
Yeah, that's right. You got to, you know, if it's an act of God, at least you got to do your part.
You at least got to be there.
Yeah. So I'm taking off.
Well, let me
there.
Just be the first one to say it's been nice knowing you.
Sure. And you get a week off next week.
Good.
I'll be doing this. I'll be up
maybe
there.
Maybe more than a week.
Maybe.
It might be. Yeah, it might be. You know, who knows?
You
know,
you might end up like Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining.
Could be.
You know?
Very well be. Yeah.
Frozen to death.
Right. Stuck against a hedge somewhere. Yeah, right. I'll be up there with the Iguanas and Sonny Landreth. We're doing another co-bill tour up there. I'll be playing with both bands, so I'll be my hands full. And
double dipping. I like it.
Yeah. It's working out.
I admire that.
Thank you. So looking forward to that. But then we'll be back the following week. Now we've had some deaths, celebrity deaths since we were here last. We had the great Robert Duvall passed away. I know a friend of yours.
Yes, Robert Duvall was a great guy. He was a friend of mine.
Amazing actor.
But the best Robert Duvall story I have is in the mid-80s, I asked this girl out on a date, and she said yes. And she goes, let's go see a movie. And we went and saw, and this is when Tender Mercies just came out, and it was getting rave reviews and all that, Oscar buzz and all that kind of stuff. And we're there at a multiplex in West LA, and we're sitting maybe like third to the last row of this theater. And about at the halfway point of the movie, both of us realized that this movie sucks.
Okay.
It's just so fucking boring.
So off in the way.
So we just start making out.
Excellent.
She looks at me and I look at her and it was just like, boom, let's start.
Well, this story is getting better.
Yeah, we start making out and basically we made out for the whole second half of the movie.
Okay.
We made out, you know, and, you know, he's...
How long is this movie?
It felt like 5 hours, but I think it was only a two-hour movie, you know. The weirdest thing was where people were staring at us, you know, as we kept making out. People, and her name was Gail, I remember that.
Okay.
She was a Greek girl.
Shout out to Gail.
Is that Greek?
Yeah, well, Gail Farajian.
Okay.
She was a Greek chick, man. And man, she had a tongue on her.
Oh, wow. Okay,
now we're getting.
Yeah, you know. But anyway, people were staring at us, and I think some people were actually getting off on us because they were bored with the movie, but they weren't on a date.
Does this get back to Robert Duvall somewhere, the story?
Are we sure we're in the right theater?
Is Robert Duvall involved in the story somewhere?
Well, it was his movie.
Oh, that's the only way. I thought you were going to say in the middle, a guy in front stands up, and it's Robert Duvall. And...
No.
Oh, okay.
No. The guy in front of us said, you smell that?
Okay.
Getting hot, baby.
Okay. All right. We're getting started early.
Pass the popcorn.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Butter it up, baby. Well, we also lost the great Jesse Jackson.
Yes, I have a Jesse. I met Jesse Jackson.
Okay.
Did
you make out in front of Jesse Jackson?
No, I just said, run, Jesse, run.
Run, Jesse, run.
Run
for
your fucking life, man. They're after. This is when he was running for president in 1984.
Oh, okay. Hymietown.
I worked at the Sunset.
New York was Hymietown.
Yeah, I worked at the Sunset Gower Studios in L.A., and me and a couple of friends of mine went to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, the original one, which was right across the street, right next to the Hollywood Palladium. And we're sitting there eating our lunch at Sco's. We used to call it Sco's. And all of a sudden, two guys in suits walk in, and they look around. And then Jesse Jackson and some entourage come in. They sit at the table right next to us. And he orders chicken and waffles, and everyone there.
As you do.
Yeah, okay. And
I do remember.
I said,
story.
"Hey, man, how you doing, Jesse? You know, I'm gonna, you know, I hope you win and all that kind of stuff." And I said, I hope you have a lot of bodyguards. You know, you know, because this is, you know, it was Reagan. Reagan was the president at the time and stuff like that. So I met Jesse Jackson that way.
Okay.
And I heard he wasn't a very good tipper.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't
that's,
know.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
But especially yeah, he died. And there was a big controversy. Like, will they, you know, they didn't want to, they asked that he would lay in state at the big thing.
Capitol.
The Capitol.
Rotunda?
The rotunda there. And they said no.
Right. Awesome. Mike Johnson, the
Louisiana
Speaker
guy.
Of the House. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Louisiana.
He turned him down.
Yeah.
What is he at?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who is he to say?
You know, I guess it's he's third in line.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, third succession.
Let that keep you awake at night.
Right, I know.
yeah, exactly.
Well, then a third person that we just lost, someone I thought you may have crossed paths with, Robert Carradine.
No, I never met Robert Carradine.
Huh, okay. It seems like somebody
but
that
he was in one of my favorite movies ever, Revenge of the Nerds.
Is that one of your favorite movies?
Oh, I love that movie.
Really?
Which one was he?
He was...
he had glasses, kind of short
hair. The nerd
hair,
with the black hair. I don't know what his name was.
Yeah, I guess a lot of them had glasses.
But no, this is why I love that movie so much. I was with my good buddy of mine in L.A., David Bowe, who's an actor, and he was a deadhead, and he said, we're going to Irvine to see the Dead. I said, I don't want to see the fucking Dead. And he's like, come on, you got to check him out. And I'd seen him once or twice before, just didn't get it. And he goes, on the way there, we're about 5 minutes away from parking. He gives me a tab of acid. So I take the acid. I'm watching The Dead. I'm still not interested. But what happens is, after the show, we drive back to his place in Bel Air, and we're fucking frying like crazy. And I turn on the TV. This is when cable TV.
Right.
And this movie comes on. It's called Revenge of the Nerds. And me and my friend Dave just sat there peeing in our pants. We just thought this was the fucking
funniest thing ever
I've ever seen, you know?
Yeah.
And then I watched it straight, you know, without being on acid, and it was still pretty fucking funny.
Okay.
In other ways.
I liked it. Yeah. And he was a good actor.
Classic.
And, you know, he comes from that Hollywood family of the Carradines and stuff like that. His brother Keith and there was
David.
David and Keith.
Dad, John.
Yeah. John Carradine.
Is that
Kung Fu.
The Kung Fu guy, right?
David. Yeah,
That was Keith. Was that Keith?
I think it was David, huh?
I'm calling
David was the Kung Fu. Keith was the musician. Keith was also a musician, and he was in...
Poor guy.
He was in a lot of movies.
Yeah,
They find somebody
in
Hollywood.
Last Picture. What's the Nashville?
Yeah, he was in Nashville. That's right. Keith
was in... Because I'm
easy. Yeah, and somebody in Hollywood, some producer thought... It was a good idea to put all three brothers in a Western together. And I can't remember the name of the Western, but you probably needed to be on acid to watch it.
Okay.
Because it was horrible.
I like all that idea.
You know.
Check it out.
And
Trouble
his dad, the dad was always in...
horror movies, right?
Yeah, horror movies, yeah. He was in that, his last film.
Also some Westerns, too.
Yeah, Westerns and stuff like that.
Big, tall dude.
Yeah.
Kind of rangy.
Like, yeah. God. Anyway, yeah, so the Carradines are all dead.
Yeah, yeah,
they're
tough,
all
man.
Dead.
It's tough.
God rest their souls.
Yeah, tough. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but anyway, so also the Winter Olympics have just ended.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah.
That's
I like the Winter.
I liked it.
Okay, all right.
I
some
love seeing those fucking young chicks in those tight panties roaming around
it?
The ice,
you
man,
said it,
with those hard nipples. I love that, man. Who wouldn't? What guy wouldn't love that? You know? You know, but
guilty.
I remember when I learned, you know, I'm not much on skiing or ice skating. I tried it, but I remember when I learned to ski, it was a great way to meet people. Skiing.
Huh.
You know that?
One
I
or
met
another,
two paramedics and three nurses.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the sports that, you know, the cliche associated with it is someone with a cast on their leg sitting around the fire.
Yeah.
Not the worst way to spend
at the lodge, but I thought, well, if that's the cliche, I definitely don't want to do it, you know? It's there's something else where you had a bandage around your head that was the cliche.
Yeah, but you meet the hot toddies, man.
I've just come from a ski trip. It was fantastic.
All right.
Much respect for those people. My question, with the Winter Olympics, you have the things where you jump on a sled.
Yeah, the luge.
Head first.
Yeah.
The skeleton.
The skeleton, yeah, right. Yeah, 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 yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't get this.
Are you,
yeah.
Are you an athlete?
Well, that's what,
or
yeah.
Or are you just an idiot?
A daredevil.
You're, a daredevil. Yeah, I think this is my question, because for maybe the first 10 yards you're running, and then after that, you're just hanging on, right?
Yeah, you're just,
you must be,
you're praying for your life.
You must be trying to throw your weight from side to side. It's got to be something.
A lot of them
it.
Are athletes. I don't mean to disparage any of our Olympians,
right,
but
right.
Are you an athlete, or are you,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I
a computer programmer who like, throws himself
down. Yeah, well, you know, like
down an ice tube.
If you're sailing,
once every 4 years.
Like if you're in the America's Cup and you're sailing a sailboat, are you an athlete?
That's same.
A, okay,
yeah.
That's
same.
Well, are golfers athletes?
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, because I've known some baseball players that say they're not athletes.
Yeah,
they're just ball players.
Ball players.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not athletes.
First baseman.
Yeah.
Pot belly.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not athletes.
Jogging it out there.
No, in fact, what's his name? The Philadelphia Phillies.
Just smashing the ball.
Philadelphia Phillies first baseman, John Kruk, back in the early, late 80s, oh, yeah. early 90s, he was so fucking overweight.
All meathead
like.
Team.
Yeah, and he was at a bar eating fucking chicken wings and drinking beer, and this woman came up to him. This is a true story. This woman came up to him and goes, "Why are you eating this stuff? You got a game tomorrow. I mean, you're an athlete." And he looked at it and goes, "I ain't an athlete. I'm a ball player." You know, I just fucking swing at a ball, you know, and hopefully it goes somewhere where they ain't.
Yeah.
You know, that's it.
Right.
You know, so anyway, like chess players, are they athletes?
No,
they're not.
Definitely not. They wouldn't say that they are.
Well, so I'll ask you, like my one of my kids asked the other day, did we win? The Olympics, did we win?
Oh, sure. We're all winners.
Yeah.
You tell them we're all winners. We're all winners.
No,
baby.
You say they won. You didn't win shit, kid. You know?
Yeah, somebody won.
Yeah, some did.
Somebody won.
Someone.
Yeah.
Well, you got anything else, man? Or should we get to our guests here? Maybe we should get to. We've been going kind of long.
All right, we'll get to our guests.
Yeah,
let's
get
save
to our
this
guests.
For.
Yeah, yeah. Save it for 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Well,
if I'm here.
We have a terrific guest here. He's already well in the mix of the podcast. He's a terrific, very soulful guitar, mandolin, harmonica player, singer, songwriter, frontman for the Bayou Americana band, Honey Island Swamp Band, as well as a side project that's really getting ahead of steam, the Riverbenders. He's also played with bands like Eric Lindell, Teresa Anderson, Papa Molly, Susan Cowsill, among others. The Honey Island Swamp Band are in their 20th year of playing together with their latest album, Custom Deluxe, still available out there. And the supergroup, the Riverbenders, with Jake Eckert, Miles Weeks, and Russ Broussard, just put out their debut album last year. Guest and I were on the Big Easy Cruise together, and we got to play together when he sat in with the Susan Cowsill Band on our last performance there on the boat. We're going to get into all that and much more, but without further ado, the great Mr. Aaron Wilkinson.
Hey!
Aaron. Now, many people call you Aaron.
They do.
Now, is that something people do in jest? Is that something that you promote?
No, it's, probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
I'm sure
they're just
sort of making fun of me a little bit. Well, you know, that's possible. That's a theory I had not considered probably enough, but
I know that name.
Now that you say that probably is most of what's going on.
Like there was a skit on that show.
The Key and Peele.
Key and Peele.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah. The fantastic. If there's anyone alive who has not seen it, you got to look it up. The substitute teacher. But in fact, one day I came home from a tour that we'd been on. There was a package, you know, anonymous package in the mail. I'm like, what is this? I open it and it's a t-shirt that says, "You done messed up, Aaron." I have no idea who sent it to me, but thank you, whoever it was.
All right. Okay. So was that the genesis of,
No. When I was a little toddler, a little tyke, mm-hmm. my uncle used to call me Aaron.
Okay.
And it just kind of stuck. And,
oh, right on.
You know, even my mom will sometimes call me Aaron, although usually that's not the case. If I'm in trouble, which is a lot, I get the full name, sometimes the first and the middle.
Right.
Yeah, my family used to call me moron.
Okay, well, yeah. so not unrelated.
I get that, too. Yeah, yeah. Even better, when I first went to college in Virginia, I went to kind of a hoity-toity university. It was great. I shouldn't say that, but it was...
Which one?
It was a Washington and Lee University.
Oh, really?
Very, like, high-minded, conservative sort of place, which
a
is not really...
A lot of New Orleanian,
they
a lot
do.
Of Rex people go to
exactly.
Washington and Lee.
And
I have two nieces
of,
who go
that's
there.
Right. It's a fantastic school, beautiful okay. place, but these people just thought it was hilarious that I showed up in a black, like, low T-top Camaro, which is what I drove. I'm like a redneck from the Gulf Coast. And they just could not get enough of that. And I was like, fuck you. What are you laughing
what's
at?
What's so
did you get
Carl
laid
fucking,
a lot?
Hell yes, dude.
Yeah,
you ever seen a Camaro?
Yeah.
Fucking badass, dude.
Good.
But the dudes crucified me. And they called...
Well, what were they driving?
They called me Cameron.
Oh.
Cameron was my nickname.
So you just had to really put it to their girlfriends even that much harder.
I still don't see what they were...
Sure.
They were still misled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how'd you wind up going to that school? That's a weird one.
Well,
I've never even heard of that school before.
Yeah,
the Iguanas got booked to play there one time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure I can tell you how that probably went. Yeah. I was a football player. I was an athlete
okay.
in high school, and I got recruited by
that.
A bunch of schools, and I had signed a scholarship to go play in a school up in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. but I wasn't really that into it. And so, if I'm being honest, I was kind of just like taking, you get these free recruiting trips.
Uh-huh.
They pay for you to fly, and they're a lot of fun. So even though I had already sort of dishonest to me, even though I'd already signed to go someplace else, I wasn't feeling real solid about it. So I took a trip to Washington and Lee, and it was the springtime. It's gorgeous there in Virginia that time of year. And my buddies that were a couple years ahead of me in high school, some of them were going to school there, and they found out that I was going to be there. So I walk into the dorm room of the captain of the team who's supposed to be hosting me, and the phone rings. This is back in the days of like actual phones.
Sure.
And he says, "It's for you." I said, "What?" He said, "It's for you." I'm there like 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Phone rings. "It's for you. Hey, Ron, we're coming to get you, man. We're coming to get you." They came and got me. My buddies came and kidnapped me.
Uh-huh.
We went and smoked weed and hiked in the mountains and swam in the rivers and had a wonderful weekend. Never did one thing football related. And
All right.
Monday morning,
celebrity visits here to the table.
Monday morning, I showed up back at school, called the people in Massachusetts and said, "Look, I'm not coming. I'm going to Washington."
Okay. All right. I like that story. All right.
I was out. So that's how I ended up.
What year was this?
That would have been, 1993.
Okay.
Yeah, 93. I'm showing my age.
And they had a football team this school?
Yes, they did.
Really?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. The ODAC Conference, the prestigious.
Okay.
Old Dominion Athletic Conference.
Division
III or something?
What's that?
Is it still around?
Yeah, it's around. No, they've championship program. I'm surprised
really?
You haven't heard of it.
No. Well, they, you know, I can't keep track of it.
NIL
everything.
Deals are staggering.
Right. Yeah, I'll bet. Tens of dollars.
Yeah, tens. I mean, 20s sometimes.
Sure, okay.
Depending on who you know.
Let's go back a little bit before that period. We'll work our way back to that. So you're not from New Orleans. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, not far from here.
Okay, yeah. I love Pensacola.
Well, I do, too. Don't tell anybody about it.
All right.
I'm trying to keep it a secret. I grew up there, went to high school, Booker T. Washington High School.
Okay.
And
did your family
is there
have
a Booker T. everywhere?
Yeah,
any state?
It's omnipresent. Yeah.
I mean, there's a Booker T. everywhere.
As there well should be.
Sure. Now, did your family go back in that area of the Florida panhandle?
A bit, but it's...
You don't want to talk about...
No.
Florida.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. Yeah. We generations deep in the Floribama.
Okay. Floribama corridor.
Yeah. It's famous, culturally rich.
Oh, it is, man. Yeah. I mean, it goes down there. I mean, it's no Washington and Lee.
Oh,
but
it definitely goes down.
But,
yes, it does.
But I mean, it's a hotbed of activity for years. I mean, the Gulf Coast Mafia was active in there.
Oh,
that corridor for probably still is.
Yeah, I can't talk about it.
No, I understand. I wouldn't ask
implicate
you to.
Implicate the innocent.
Yeah,
I'm
no.
Do that.
Yeah, no. I understand. So it was fun growing up there. Were you at the beach all the time?
I was, but you know, like any other like teenager, like you kind of take it for granted. And by the time I was senior in high school, I was like, fuck this place. I'm getting out of here as far away as I can.
Now, were you already playing music at that point?
Yeah. I started playing music. I think my dad bought me my first guitar when I was like 11.
Okay.
And he told me if I would stick with the acoustic guitar for a year, he would buy me an electric.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to get a year in
right.
on the acoustic because he didn't, you know, and it was good advice.
Yeah.
Because a lot of kids get an electric, they fiddle around with it,
start
they quit,
making
whatever.
Noise. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but the acoustic, I had to take lessons. I had to learn how to play it, and that gets your fingers in shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It gets your hand in shape. And then he bought me the electric. He stayed true to it, had the electric. Kramer.
Okay.
To show you the age, you know?
Right, sure. Yeah,
whammy
yeah.
bar.
Yeah.
Dude, sick.
Now, did you find other kids that were playing to form a little
high school
band?
Yeah, we drove my mom crazy, like 12, 13 years old, playing at top volume in the garage.
Nice.
My parents didn't know anything about like sound dampening or anything, so it's just like concrete.
Right.
Sheetrock. There wasn't even sheetrock. It was just like
studs
and insulation. Yeah. Metal roof is it was deafening.
Now, what kind of stuff were y'all playing?
Metallica.
Oh,
a lot
okay.
of Metallica. Like maybe some Sex Pistols, like heavy shit, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, crate amplifiers.
Uh-huh.
Strictly
okay.
crate amplifiers.
Okay.
And,
not going with the PV.
Is,
all right.
Well, that was when I started playing bass, when I went to the dark side.
Okay.
The PV TNT. That's the next chapter.
Yeah, man.
But,
those TNTs. I still have my TNT 100.
Soldier.
Yeah, man. Those things never quit.
Hell no. No, but we did that. But, you know, I also had, like, this other side. Like, I was really into the Beatles.
Uh-huh.
You know, and shit like that. And my dad bought me a massive Beatles book. Like, the comprehensive, like, 1,000 pages. It was ridiculous.
Right.
And it had all the chords, you know, at the top. And, you know,
sure.
I just remember looking at it, how can there be so many chords?
Right.
You know, what the fuck? Yeah.
Especially over the whole course of their career,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
They get
yeah.
into so many different
like even
kind
a
of
song
forms.
Is like, how are there this many chords? Anyway, well, yeah, so I kind of always had that in one ear, but I was, you know, I would lock myself in my bedroom and listen to Master of Puppets and
okay.
Pink Floyd, The Wall for like a year.
Right, and you were getting into smoking weed as a teenager, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mom, you listening out there? Yeah, she knows.
Well, you know. Yeah, yeah.
She knows.
Yeah,
she knows.
Can cut this out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we did have, you know, I had friends with older brothers and, yeah.
Sure. And so successful high school career, you're doing well in school at the same time?
I did well in school, man. I mean, I went to a public school in Pensacola. It was not rocket science.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not as dumb as I look. I did all
no,
right.
No. I can tell by the way you talk, you're quite intelligent.
I did okay.
I'm very perceptive about this.
I didn't find it. High school was a lot of fun.
Oh, nice.
It was good.
Okay. Not the best years of your life, but still fine.
Pretty close. No.
Really?
Okay. No, I'm kidding. No, not the best years of my life. But no, it was good, man. It was a good place to grow up.
Because you talk to some people, I will say, oh, that was the best time of my life. You know, really, that's so sad.
No. Yeah, I'm very aware that would be that'd be pretty poor to say that.
That's I mean, really
now, yes. Over the years, we've always, you know, poked fun at Florida and Arizona for being just crazy
weirdest states.
You're not wrong.
Yeah,
you're not
so
wrong.
That's why you left.
But you
gone back?
Oh yeah. Well, now I'm like, why did I ever leave here? This is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, like during COVID, I they were jumping around here, but I kind of had a premonition of what was going to happen because I have friends in Italy.
Yeah.
And things, and they told me, and so I kind of made a proactive move,
mm-hmm.
and I said to my wife, I said, let's get over here and let's let's just spend a week or two over here at the beach and just let things cool down.
Right.
Because I didn't want to be stuck in New Orleans if they closed down the city.
Oh, geez.
Within that 2 weeks, the whole thing went to shit, and I ended up living on the beach in Pensacola for a year.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's an exaggeration. 7 months, maybe?
Okay.
During COVID, which was, let me tell you, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You strike me as a beach person.
No. I grew up in West LA, Venice Beach, and I loved the beach, the boardwalk, but I hated the ocean.
Yeah,
and the sand.
The sand.
The sand
the
saltwater, sucks.
Yeah,
sand
yeah.
is the worst
like my
part.
Keyboard player.
Yeah. I hate
see,
the sand.
I love that shit, man. I grew up in it. That's I'm a saltwater dude, man.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah, I love it. I love the beach.
I could see that.
So yeah, I miss that part now, but you know, there was nothing going on in Pensacola, man. There's like no culture. There was no music. I mean, it was, but it's underground. It's nothing like, I mean, it's obvious to say it's nothing like here, but no place is.
Sure.
But so, you know, I went to college, blah, blah, blah. now, played football, then moved here. You know.
Now, what do you study in college at the Washington and Lee? What's your degree program?
You'll like this. So I got the very useful major in English and poetry.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I see what that's getting me.
And well,
I did some journalism. That got me some paychecks.
Yeah, where'd you do that?
I wrote for the Times-Picayune.
Oh, okay.
And I edited a magazine, a health and fitness magazine. I got a bunch of different odd jobs, you know, because I was like, you know, I was getting my feet wet. I didn't grow up here. I didn't know anybody. So I was starting to get jobs, and I was just trying to pay my way, you know.
Well, sorry, we skipped over a part. So you're at Washington Lee. What prompts you to get a degree in poetry there?
Well, that's just what I was into is English, okay. You know.
You'd already been
they
doing
have
a lot of reading.
And,
yeah,
poetry?
Yeah. And they do. Well, it's not. That's what your thesis is.
Okay.
I did not get a bachelor's of poetry, although that would be fitting if I did.
In creative writing?
Creative writing, yeah.
Okay.
And then there's a...
But it helps with the chicks, right?
Oh, yeah, they love
the poetry,
that. They love a guy who can write some poems and makes no money. I mean, come on, line up.
Yeah, well, Washington and Lee, it's a very specific sort of person that goes there, other than you, I'm guessing.
Well, fortunately, yeah, that's true. Fortunately, here's what they don't tell you, like on the brochure, like it's surrounded by four or five all-girls schools.
Yeah.
Washington and Lee used to be an all-boys school.
Okay.
And when I got there, I was like, where are all the girls? And they were like, you know, it's like 80% male, 20% female. And I was like, huh? It's like, what? I didn't really do my research.
But they had sister schools.
Sister schools. Okay. Hollins, Sweetbriar. Shout out Sweetbriar.
Okay. one of your faves?
Yeah, one of my faves. Yeah.
Nice. So you look like you got laid a lot.
Again.
The gift of gab.
I want to temper that with, you know.
He had the cool 80, car.
80%.
Strapping
80% guys, 20% girls. And
so you're
while I thought my
car...
wouldn't you?
Sure, man. Well,
while,
you know.
While I thought my car was very cool, I'm not sure that was... That was a widely held perception.
Really?
So, yeah. Sadly for them.
Yeah, you know, underneath it all, those girls are saying, the guy with the T-top.
You guys
got
to understand,
once.
At that time, being a redneck was not cool. It was that had not happened yet.
Oh, okay.
So then when that did occur, I was poised to benefit from that cultural shift.
Nice. Yeah. You had already pre-positioned yourself.
I've spent years trying to deny it. Then I was able to just fully embrace.
Nice.
The red streak.
Right. So you graduate from Washington and Lee. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, what prompts you to come to New Orleans?
So I was playing with a group of guys at the time. We had a band in college. And one was from Little Rock. One was from Shreveport. One was from... Well, I guess it was just three of us that ended up moving here together. And we were kind of trying to, we decided we wanted to keep playing music together, spend a year or two somewhere. I wanted to go to San Francisco because I grew up in the South. I didn't really want to come back. I wanted to do something different.
Yeah, sure.
But for them, New Orleans wasn't so close to home. For me, New Orleans is 3 hours from Pensacola. We used to come over here in high school. Don't listen, Mom.
Right.
We used to like sneak off and come over here during high school, Lollapalooza and shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to get further away, but for them, it made more sense.
It
he was from Little Rock.
Enough.
Right.
Them.
But
yeah,
so
yeah.
I kind of lost out on that one.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how I ended up here. But it's a good thing because, you know, you go to San Francisco or New York, places like that, they're on my list. Like, you can't play music. I mean, you can. But you got to work three jobs and then play music in your spare time just to make the rent.
And you have no spare
Whereas
time.
Whereas here, at that time, this is 97, 98, whatever.
Still cheap to live here.
It's so cheap. Like, you could actually really do it.
Right.
You could really, like, play music and, like, get by.
You have to be semi-employed and still live a very comfortable lifestyle.
Do a few hustles here and there. We'll remain nameless. But you could, like, do it and actually spend your time playing music where those other cities, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Right. Right.
So I got lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wound up being a wise choice. So you get down here, find employment with the Times-Picayune, the great newspaper.
Times-Picayune. It wasn't the Advocate then; it was the Times-Picayune.
Yeah.
I covered a lot of.
what kind of beats were you on?
really exciting neighborhood meetings, right? Like, sure. Talking about, you know, trash pickup and,
right?
I don't know.
Well, you get to learn the city from the inside.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Times.
Lots
hired.
Of complaining going on out there, Renee.
Sure. Well, they got a lot of plenty to complain about.
It hasn't stopped the complaining.
Yeah, well,
it's still going.
You know, we still have plenty to
complain. So the Times hired you because of your poetry degree?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Washington and Lee carries a lot of weight.
Oh,
yeah, a lot of people know that school here, that. Especially among like the Ashton Phelps of the world.
Yeah, it also got me a job teaching English as a second language at Delgado, where I was hired over the phone.
Okay, because they could tell that you could speak English.
And I walked in and...
So what's the first language?
My first language? Meathead. What's your first language?
No, you were...
Caveman. No.
You were teaching people for whom English was a second language.
Yeah, but it just shows you the state of the city at that time or whatever. I walked in. They said, where'd you go to school? I said, Washington Lee. They said, you're hired. Within 10 minutes, I was standing in front of my first class.
Wow.
I was like, what do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
And the director of the programs, I said, what do I do? He said, anything you do for them will be better than what they've had.
Wow.
Go get him, kid.
Wow.
So you taught him how to sing Da Do Run Run, right?
Start with the single syllables.
There were a lot of different like accents in that class. I don't think Da Do Run Run would have been the best one to start with.
Yeah, okay.
But,
yeah,
you know.
You got to start somewhere.
Anyway,
but
that was a great experience, too.
Building block, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think the point is, like, in New Orleans, there's a lot of opportunities. Another great hustle I just got to tell you about really quickly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think you'll dig this.
Sure.
So with this journalism degree. So like there was this magazine at the time called Shot in L.A. Do you remember it? Uh-huh. You ever heard of that? Yeah, you wouldn't have. But it was focused on the movie industry because like there was a lot of stuff. And they had a calendar. There was a lot of movie business in the town at that time. They had a calendar section in the back where they did like dining, concerts, you know, theater, whatever. I said, look, this would be a lot better if we focused on one thing each month. And so, and I did a little more of a write-up than a listing, like to pop out.
Right, right,
and
right.
And so, in so doing, I was able to get myself a credentialed pass as a Saints beat reporter.
Nice.
So I was sitting in the Superdome. Like nice. Getting in the with like real journalists.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was able to be a restaurant reviewer, like nice. Galatoire's, Antoine's, like all the places.
Very good.
I was so hungry. I was like in my 20s, and they would come by. They'd be like, "Sir, the chef would like." This was literally said to me, sir, the chef wants you to know you don't have to finish everything that we bring out. Right, you are. Bring more.
But you were still a growing boy. So
I was. I had that metabolism still. But yeah, so that was quite a hustle. Of the hustles I've pulled off,
genius,
that was brilliant.
That's, well, you know, they taught you something at Washington and Lee.
I remember interviewing Galactic. At the time, they were coming up,
okay.
And I contacted them, and you know, I had multi-purposes. I wanted to interview them, but I also was trying to become a musician myself, so I wanted to know what they knew. You know what I mean?
Right.
How are these guys doing it? These guys are not unlike me,
right?
So I went over there and I met Houseman and Robert
Therrell DeCluett.
Yeah, Therrell DeCluett
and Robert Mercurio.
Robert. So they said, "Well, let's meet over here," and we went to the J&P Superette on Eagle Street.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And before we went back to Houseman's house.
Nice.
And we ordered like the most, I don't know if you know, but the J&P Eagle over there, like most po' boy shots, they got the 6 and the 12 and the 24 inch. They have the 8, the 16, and the 32.
Wow, okay.
Over there, yeah. And among other things, you know, you can get all your weird meats and stuff.
Right,
but,
right.
But, I sat there with the Houseman and Rob and... ordered our po' boys and went back to Houseman's, Therrell's house, and sat at his table and picked his brain and wrote an article and learned a few things myself, you know.
Cool, man.
So it was a good way to like get your feelers out in the city.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely. Starting to meet people. Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, how do you start meeting musicians in the
meeting
city?
People, so
I
guess making things happen.
Right, right, right. Well, let's see. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's I can feel it. It's about that time. Why don't you tell
yeah,
people?
Yeah. Listen, the nation knows what we're going to do, and we'll be right back.
Wait, well, we'll tell them what we're going to do.
We're going to take a break.
Oh, okay.
What are we going to do on the break?
We're going to piss.
Refresh your cocktails.
Yeah, refresh our cocktails. You know, the nation does that, too. So right. We'll be right back.
See you soon, nation.
Touch of regret, trouble in my mind. Trace the sunset down behind the Georgia line. I could swing a hammer, and I could drive a nail. I could drive for 16 hours, not breaking jail. I don't ever wonder who I'm meant to be. Every shadow I meet looks just like me. Yes, I've been gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone, gone. Gone, 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 long gone. I've been gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone, gone. Gone, 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 long gone.
And we're back.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yes, you are.
I am Renee Komen. Back with our guest, Mr. Aaron Wilkinson. Aaron, as his mother sometimes calls him. Now, Aaron, you're probably not aware since you're kind of new to the podcast, but this is a listener-supported operation. We have PayPal and Venmo links in the show notes of every show, and our devoted listeners will use those links to support the podcast, buy us cocktails that we're enjoying here. You're having a cocktail yourself.
Damn straight they will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They know what's good for them.
And, okay, I like the confidence. He's going to bully y'all a little bit.
If I have to. We don't hope it doesn't come to that.
Right, right. I know. I always do. We could do this the easy way or the hard way, right? So, yeah, we have the PayPal and Venmo links there, and as well as the Patreon link. We have a handful of patrons that are supporting the show week in, week out. That's what we're running on this week because we, again, have no outside support.
Thank you, Patreon.
Running 3 or 4 or 5 weeks in a row here. So come on, people, wake up. Get some skin in the game. Somebody's listening to the show.
Want it. Act like you want it.
Right, right. Thank you. And also we have the link for the Troublemen Podcast t-shirts. And also follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Cost you nothing. Helps us a lot. And, yes, I'll be out on the road with the Iguanas and Sonny Landreth. And then we have festival season is coming up. That's getting booked right up there. And, you know, French Quarter Festival, what, the third weekend of April, backed right up against Jazz Fest now. It's 3 weekends in a row.
I've done that
this
now.
Year.
I've and committed to that.
So I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls for those dates, booking up all those free spots.
Yeah.
So everybody, keep on the lookout for those. Come see both myself and Aaron with all of his bands, and you can find my dates there at the iguanas.com.
You know what you won't see? Me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Manny won't be at any
Manny,
of that
don't
shit.
Don't say that.
Manny won't be there. No,
I don't care for music.
You don't mean that.
No,
you don't mean that.
I hate music.
That's not you talking.
The older I get, the more I hate music.
That's the stress
talking. Especially live
stress
music.
Talking.
I can't stand live music. It's just so fucking
that.
Loud, man.
That
yeah.
is true.
Yeah, I hear you, Manny. Well, yeah. Many people do still love it, thankfully. And, yeah, someone was asking about my show at Wolf Trap coming up next week. It's already sold out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
At the, in D.C.?
Yeah. Vienna. Yeah.
If you can make it there.
Yeah. Well, you know, fingers crossed.
You ever need a sub, by the way, on any of those Iguanas or Sunny gigs?
Okay.
Raising my hand. I still have a bass guitar.
Right on. Well, you know, one thing about me is I do understand the foundational precept of show business, which is the show must go on. So I've played gigs with a collapsed lung. I shit you not.
Yeah, I believe it.
I will be there. But thank you for, I'll keep that in my back pocket.
Tuck it,
if I ever
tuck
need
it in
somebody.
Your back
right,
pocket.
Right, right, right.
Those are good gigs. Congratulations. Those are great bands. Two fantastic bands.
I'm so blessed, man.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Fantastic.
Very fortunate. Anyway, it seems like enough of that. Let's get back to our guest, the great Mr. Aaron Wilkinson. Aaron, so you moved to New Orleans. You're starting to meet musicians. What's the first band, or maybe what's the first big gig? I know you played with Teresa Anderson for a time. Was that one of the first ones?
That was one of the first ones, and that was like a real educational experience because somehow it got to me that they were like trying out bass players. You know, it's like an audition.
Now, had you been playing bass before that?
Yeah. I played. I made the bad decision to pick up a bass and purchase a bass in high school. I don't know if this was your experience as a bass player too, but like I was a guitar player. That was my thing. I was like the shredder.
Not my experience.
And then, then this will be, illustrative to those guitarists out there. Like, don't buy a bass unless you're prepared to play it, because you will be the only person amongst all your guitar friends who owns a bass, and you will therefore be the default bass player.
Now, to me, that seems like that's the thing you want to be doing.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm with you. Well, but it's very. You could make an argument. It's very interesting to have come from the guitar world of wanting to shred and step out front and be the focus, and then go all the way to the dark side, as I like to call it.
Okay.
You know, and then come back as I have now. Mm-hmm, honey,
right.
So I really do think it makes you a better.
Oh, for sure.
Communicator,
yeah.
To both sides. Like you really get it. You know what I mean? I get very deeply the difference.
I'm sure your time as a front man is greatly enhanced by your time spent playing in the rhythm section.
I would almost say. I mean, look, if I had my way, I'd be back in the rhythm section.
Right. But, it's so fun.
Yeah, it is. It's, for me, I prefer that. But yeah, just it. I don't mean to digress, but yeah, it gives you a vocabulary for both things, you know, and it just makes you better to be able to understand both, because the approaches can be. Very different.
They should be different.
They're the same. It's not fun.
Yeah, no, they all have good. Their. Yeah, yeah, no, you don't want a bass player who's trying to be a guitar player.
No, and I was that. I was the guitar player playing the bass for a long time.
Yeah.
Before I finally figured it out, but Teresa was having auditions. I caught wind of it. I actually went and like tried out. Like there was like four different people trying out.
Oh, okay.
I got the call and
you
I got
the
gig.
Nice.
And that was awesome.
Nice.
And I was right behind Peter Harris had been in the gig before,
okay.
Who I really loved. And
yeah, excellent player.
Is a younger guy. I would go out and see him play the Maple Leaf all the time. Really loved his playing. And
sure. Yeah.
Peter's so that was really cool. That was relatively short lived, mostly because I was. Didn't really have my shit together at that point, so Teresa decided it'd be better.
Yeah, she's a violin player.
She is a violin player, and singer, and vocalist, and great.
Okay.
And now, I did some touring with her, and the best part of that, beyond Teresa, who was just beautiful and wonderful, was I got to play with Robert Mache.
Oh, okay.
Who is,
wonderful,
very well,
amazing
guitarist, not particularly the easiest person on you as you're a young guy coming along.
He won't hold back.
He doesn't really hold back, I needed that, Renee.
No, that's great. I love Robert. Robert and I are very similar,
And we had our moments, and we got off stage after one gig, and he was like, "You really killed it tonight. I was so proud of you." And it was literally like, I was like beaming.
I
was like, oh my
Who's
God.
Who's this again?
He said he was proud of me.
Robert Mache. He was a guest on the podcast about maybe 15 months ago.
Incredible guitarist.
Guy who revealed, I just learned, I'd known the guy for fucking ever.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of weeks before he came on the podcast, he said, oh yeah, I lived in New York and, starting in like 1976. And I was like, oh, you must have known the Cramps, huh? Or seen the Cramps. He goes, I was their roadie. They lived at my house. Nick Knox and Brian Gregory lived at my house for 2 years. So, yeah.
I knew them, yeah.
That guy's fascinating.
Yeah,
you know, speaking fantastic. Of female fiddle players, did you see Amanda Shaw at the greasing of the poles?
I saw that on the newspaper.
Yeah, and she fucking...
She won.
Well, yeah, but she lost. Her top came off and her boobs fell out. Did you see that?
No,
I sadly missed that.
Man. It was hot.
I'm shocked.
I've always had a thing for her,
I
man.
Know you have.
Yeah. She was greasing the
pole.
Are
you sure?
Is this really true?
You didn't hear
not
about
a bit?
It?
No. I totally missed that.
Yeah,
what
man.
They call it a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah, kicking myself for missing that one.
Oh, well. You know,
I'm always in the
We
got to
get her on the show.
I'm never in the wrong.
Anyway, so then at some point you wind up being in Eric Lindell's band. Are you the bass player in that band?
I am. I went and saw Eric play at... But before we get to that, I gotta say, real quickly, I did not do a good job at Teresa's band. I was not taking it seriously enough. We won't say she fired me. She invited me not to play with her anymore.
Okay.
Got a call from Irene Sage. The whole point of this, I just want to mention Irene Sage because she's such a badass.
Shout out to
so
Irene.
Awesome. That was totally different thing. Rock and roll, barroom sort of rock, definitely feeling me up and somewhat close to, I don't think she would mind me saying physically abusing me on stage.
Okay.
Oh.
Sexually.
And you liked it.
Yeah, it was part of the show.
Sure.
I was for it.
Okay.
I was like 25, man. I was let's go. Irene's awesome.
So,
love you, Irene.
That was a good
shout
fit.
Out to Irene.
That was a good fit for
that
you.
That was a good fit. And it was a good, it was a good antidote. Like, it kind of, to Teresa's thing, which
it was
is a lot
loose.
More. This is, Teresa's thing was a lot more challenging. This was a lot more loose, barroom, sort of rock and roll. I went and saw Eric Lindell playing at the Lounge Lizard, God rest its soul, down there across from the House of Blues on the Decatur. And the girl I was dating at the time, I looked at her, I said, I'm going to be in this band.
Nice.
I said, I need to be in this band.
Nice.
And we met after the show. We talked, whatever. We kind of had just stayed in touch. And one day I was sitting at my desk editing this magazine, my day job or whatever. And he called and he's like, "Hey, Ron, you ready?" I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, "We're going." Like, where we're going? He's like, "We're going to Key West, man. I need you. Like, I need a bass player. We're going." I was like, "All right, man. Well, give me, I'm thinking give me a week or so. Get my shit together." He's like, "When are we going?" "Tomorrow." I was like, all right.
Well, that's how Eric is, right?
No, it is. It is how Eric is.
It's always last minute,
As I was to learn over the years.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you must have a lot of tales from...
I have some tales.
Now, how long were you with Eric?
So I was with Eric about 5 or 6 years,
that's
I guess.
That's a long fucking time to last with him, man. I mean, most people don't last that long.
Well, but we had a different relationship. For the beginning of it, it was really just the two of us, we would go out and, it'd be me and him in the car and we'd show up someplace and we'd be talking to the promoter and he's going to get mad at me for saying this, but I thought it was awesome. We'd show up to the promoter and be like, "Yeah, we're going to need, some guitar amps and, maybe a guitar and, do you know any drummers? Do you know any good drummers?" We met some incredible drummers that
way.
We did. There's some really amazing ones. I mean, that didn't happen all the time, but it happened a couple times. And, we kind of built it together. And, he had some drummers from back home in California that he loved working with. Jake Brown, shout out, guy that I loved working with too. And,
nice.
We just kind of, sometimes we worked with Stanton. Sometimes there was a few different drummers over the years that we worked with and it was a growing experience to kind of learn how to work with different people. And you have to be able to communicate on stage. And that's could not be more important.
And being out on the road, road managing
and also
yourself,
the fearless thing about Eric, I still have such crazy respect for this. Like he would get on stage and just start a riff, just start going.
Right.
And it's like, all right, let's pick it up. Let's go. And let's make it up. Then he'd start, he'd start ad-libbing, singing. I'd catch what we'd link onto something. I'd start harmonizing with him. And those became the songs, eventually. But, that was all just done. Just, fuck it. We were a trio. We didn't have a ton of material. So, we had to literally, fill some hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he is kind of fearless in that way. And, Eric, I remember when I played some gigs with him back when he was first playing at the Circle Bar.
Yeah.
Same.
And he'd say, it's like, "God, I love your guitar playing." And he goes, He goes, I only know two licks. I was like, yeah, but they're both great, man.
No, he was very self-deprecating about his guitar player.
I love them both, and I never get tired of hearing them, man. Yeah,
right. Well, that was a tough time for him, too, because, like, you know, he's out there with the trio, and it's like, once the verse and the choruses are over, what's going to happen? You got to take another guitar solo, man.
Right. We break it down. We build it up.
I took a lot of bass solos,
oh,
bro.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody probably wanted to hear that I didn't want to play.
Nobody ever wants to. Yeah, that's the thing about bass solos. Nobody ever wants
I can ask you. I'm going to turn the table on you as a bass player. Doesn't it drive you crazy when you're a bass player and, like, you support everybody while they're soloing. You do everything to build them up. Then you go to solo and everybody just stops.
Oh,
and there's
the
bass by itself.
No, look.
Come on, man.
I'm playing any kind of gig that I'm on these days. Like, you know, people are like, oh, you want to take a course? I'm like, fuck no, man. Absolutely not. No, like why? Why? Yeah. These people don't want to hear that. That's not what this is about. This is not, you know, this is not about bass solo.
You want me to provide the background music while everyone goes and gets a beer?
You know, let's not stick a monkey wrench in this proceeding here. Let's keep playing this dance music that we're playing here, or whatever, this pop music that we're playing.
We are of like minds.
But. Yeah. We're in the engine room. When you're playing the bass,
down
in the engine room, you got your pants rolled up to your knees, you're walking in water, you're calling up to the bridge going, we're okay, we're good.
Well, you know, you know what I always thought, and I'll leave it alone, about playing the bass, though. I'm not looking at the people in the front of the room, the people right by the stage. I'm looking at the people in the back.
Right.
The people that aren't really
moving.
The people that aren't paying attention.
Right.
The people that are in a conversation and their brain is in a conversation, but their ass is moving.
Right. Are they
moving? If their ass is not moving, you're not doing it right.
Right. But if
you need
to
be doing it, you need to change what you're doing until their ass is moving.
Oh, no. It's
hitting them on a level that's below their consciousness.
I see the same thing, man.
You know what I'm saying?
All the way to the back of the room.
No. Then you're doing it right.
That's right. That's right.
That means you're doing it right. That's the power of the dark side.
Yes. Okay. So you put in your time with Eric Lindell.
That was a fantastic band. It was a great time. We played on the Conan O'Brien show.
Oh, wow, really?
That was maybe the best band I've ever been in. It was
cool.
Awesome.
Now, at this point, so the band that you played on the Conan O'Brien show with, who at that point, who
so
who
I had, this is part of the Honey Island Swamp Band story, because I had met Chris Mule on an All That gig. You probably played with All That at some point.
No, I never.
But almost everyone else has.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you, son.
There's a benefit in scarcity, you know. Now I play with a lot of people, but you know, I got to.
Well, the rest of us who were just slutting it up with All That. That's how I met.
But no, everybody went through that band. Yeah. So you met Chris Mule.
That's how I met Chris Mule. And so when it came time to be in Eric's band, and we kind of got, I won't say we got tired of the trio thing, but we wanted to kind of expand.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I pushed pretty hard to get Chris in the band.
Right.
And Chris ended up in the band, and we cut a record together.
You did a bunch of records.
We did a lot of writing together, and that was a really awesome experience, the three of us writing together.
Cool.
Which is really...
So Eric's a great writer, man.
Great writer.
Songs
incredible writer.
Terrific.
Incredible writer, and so was Chris. And so that was really awesome, and that was the band that kind of, to me, like our culmination was sort of, we played that Conan O'Brien show. You know, it was great after that too, but over the years that just kind of ran its course, and
sure,
Katrina hit, and that's what really shifted everything.
Right. No, so you wound up like in San Francisco.
We were in Katrina. San Francisco for the summer with the Eric Lindell band, because Eric is from the West Coast. He's from Santa Rosa, just north of there, and
Bay Area.
You know, good on him. He was spend the summer out there instead of slogging it out down here. You know.
Right, sweating it out.
Yeah, in the misery. And so we were happy to be out there. You know, we were out there. We had gigs all summer. It was great.
Lots of places to play up and down the coast.
Yeah, lots of places to play up and down the coast. And so we were just kind of based out there. We were staying out there. And when the hurricane hit, you know, all of our shit was back here.
Right.
We each of us just had our instruments and the suitcase we had with us.
Right.
And we watched the whole fucking thing go down on TV. And it was like, okay.
Crazy, man.
I guess I live here now.
Yeah.
It was literally like that.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's just
right now.
Yeah. After a while, you watch it for 48, 72 hours, and you're just like, okay, well, I can't watch this anymore. I guess I'll start life again.
Yeah,
you know?
Insane, man. Yeah, it was like, nuts. Yeah.
No, so that was tough, but it also, there was a lot of silver linings, and one of them is the Honey Island Swamp Band. We were sitting in a bar, the Boom Boom Room, mm-hmm. out there in San Francisco a couple months after it, and there was a bunch of New Orleans musicians out there. Anders was out there. Kirk Joseph was out there. Tab was out, in and out. But the Boom Boom Room is like known as a, as I'm sure you know, is where all the New Orleans musicians play, you know,
okay.
New Orleans bands. And so it's a natural place for us to go. At that time, there was no cell phone service. You couldn't, if you had a 504 number, you couldn't talk to anybody. Right. So you were really like cut off, you know?
Right.
So me and Chris Millay are sitting there, and in walks Sam Price, bass player Sam Price, and Garland Paul, the drummer. I didn't know Garland at that time, but Chris did. And we're like, total surprise, like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Uh-huh.
What are you doing here?
Right.
We sit there and we catch up, hug and drink and everything. And we're like, hey, we talk to Alex Andreas Zander, mm-hmm. the bartender, the owner. And we say, hey, man, we got a band here. Can we have a gig? And he was like, yeah, you can play every Sunday.
Wow.
And we're like, fuck yeah. More drinks and everything and party. And then Monday morning he calls and he's like, I need a name for the listing in the paper. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, you know, the band that's going to play every Sunday. I'm like, oh, fuck.
You didn't even remember that you'd agreed to make a band.
So let me call you back. So I got called Chris, and Chris is like,
one of those blackout moves.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's exactly what it was. And Chris is like, let me call you back. So he's like, Honey Island Swamp Band. I'm like, that sucks. I was like, fuck no. Like, give me anything else. It's too many words, too much. I couldn't think of anything else. I was hungover. I was like, Honey Island Swamp Band, Alex, for now. And it stuck. And we played the Boom Boom Room every Sunday for a year.
Wow.
Until the FEMA money ran out.
Sure.
And then we moved back to New Orleans.
Now, you built up a following during this time?
We built up a following. That, I mean, everybody was so supportive.
Even made a recording out
there? We recorded. So the guys who did the sound at the Boom Boom Room, the sound engineers, they all, their day jobs was working at the record plant studios in Sausalito, where, you know, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, like Songs in the Key of Life, like legendary fucking studio,
right.
You know, that we could never ever dream of sniffing to afford to record in.
Right.
And they were, because there was this wave of, like, you know, generosity after Katrina, and they were like, the American, come in here and record for free.
Yeah. Wow.
Literally.
Yeah. That shit like that was happening after
Katrina.
It was
happening.
Man.
Dude, it was insane. It was insane. And so, you know, we're out there. Kirk's on the record. Like, Anders was around. Unfortunately, we didn't get him on a record. But yeah, we recorded our very first debut record in this, like, legendary studio for free. And it's still the best-sounding record we've ever recorded.
Yeah.
It's
Well, everything was so raw at that time, too, you know, emotionally speaking. Yeah. I mean, everything had been stripped away, man.
It was a trip. It was crazy.
Thinking back on it now, 20 years later, it's...
it was bewildering. It was crazy, man. We were
biblical.
We were in the wind, man.
Yeah.
We were out there in the wind. But yeah, it was sick, and we spent a year. We'd play every Sunday at the Boom Boom Room. We'd go down to L.A. We'd go up to Northern California. You know, we weren't hurting for gigs. Everybody felt sorry for us, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know? And shit, they were buying us gear. It was fucking nuts, dude. I'm not kidding, man.
No, I believe you.
I got the full dresser, the 810 cabinet with the Ampeg head and the whole thing, you know, shit I never could have afforded before. But
yeah.
Yeah, but then the funny part of all that was, I had with me on the road, I had my bass. I was a bass player. Mm. I had my small suitcase and my clothes and shit, and I had a mandolin that my buddy, Ashley Pennywell, shout out from Pensacola and from Washington and Lee, had loaned me, because a mandolin you can carry around you don't have to check it.
Yeah.
You can have it in the hotel room and play it. And so I just had this thing is treating it like a toy. I was just kind of fooling around. And then when we started the band, like, that was one of the few possessions I had with me. Me and Sam are both bass players at the time. So I said, well, look, I got this mandolin. I know how to play the acoustic guitar. I'll do that. You be the bass player in the Honey Island Swamp Band. This is before Dubs Defunct with two bass players. You know,
right.
And we didn't have that concept.
You're better off.
Better off. Yeah. They're doing just fine with that.
Yeah.
So I started playing the mandolin.
Oh, okay. That's the genesis of that.
Yeah, and like two months into our residency there at the Boom Boom Room, it's right across the street from the Fillmore. Susan Tedeschi and her band come over. They just played at the Fillmore.
Uh-huh. A
couple sold out sets, and they're like, Susan Tedeschi's in the house, so call her up. So I was like, all right, I called her up. Well, she comes up with her drummer and her bass player, and everybody in my band sits down. And I'm like, you motherfuckers. You just fucking you sold me out. So then I'm there on stage with Susan Tedeschi and her band, and she sings the verse, chorus, whatever. She looks at me like she wants to trade licks. I've been playing the mandolin for like 3 weeks. Like I could have been holding a 2x4. And she just like burnt me down, dude. It's just like, I mean, she was nice about it,
right?
But it was just totally undressed. So humbling. Yeah.
Well, but it's the moments like that where you have to figure out, am I going to wither or am I going to grow?
Am I
going to
fake it or make it? And
right,
I faked it.
There you go.
But anyway, that's the story of how the Honey Island Swallow Band started. That was 2006, you know, roughly.
Right.
You know.
We're coming up on 20 years.
Yeah, and this is 20 years. Yeah.
You guys had a terrific career, made 6 records, have...
what's the trip is, like, none of that would have happened if it weren't for that some fucking storm.
And, you know, what's a tragedy, you know, again, the silver linings promote themselves, you know.
You just have to
be ready to embrace whatever
comes.
Accept
them, yeah. You got to roll with it.
Right.
Or else you're going to get rolled by it.
Yep, and now we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast here. You know, Manny gets up early. It's getting to be his bedtime
ready, man.
Here. But, you know, so Honey Island Swamp Band doing... great business all this time, still on the Big Easy cruise, and that was so great seeing you all there.
It
band
was great
sounds fucking
you too.
Fantastic.
Thank
man
you.
Love your singing.
Thank
you know
you so much,
great
man.
Having you jump
that.
Up and play with Susan, play mandolin.
Susan's the best. Yeah,
sing. Susan is there. She's a rare creature, man. There's not,
oh man,
there's,
she's a bodhisattva.
Yes. But then speaking of Susan, you had your side project, which started as a side project, I guess, the Riverbenders with you and Jake Eckert and Miles Weeks.
Right.
Started as like an acoustic trio.
Yep.
And then I know, because I was playing with Russ at the time, he said, yeah, I'm playing with these guys. And he played one gig with y'all at the Maple Leaf, I think, where he sat in on drums, and then he was in the band after that.
Yeah, his natural fit, yeah.
And so, band sounds so cool, and then now I know Susan has wormed her way into your band.
Yeah, she's such a worm. She's so wormy.
Well, you know, anytime you go, she goes, can I sing? And you go, sure. And you go, well, now you're in the band.
Yeah, well, you're clearly the singer now. It's almost embarrassing to even sing next to her. But yeah, she's amazing, and Russ is amazing, and so is Jake and Miles. And that was born out of a different world catastrophe. That was born out of the pandemic.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We had known each other, me and Jake and Miles, forever. But, you know, you probably went through this too. After that, there was a lot of need and like opportunity for sort of small format,
right?
Sort of things, you know. And so we did that.
Porch concerts
all day, baby.
Yeah.
Crawfish boils, every one of them. Yeah. Burger cookouts, hot dogs.
Right.
Yeah. Bring back the pandemic. Man.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite times.
You're not all wrong. You're not all wrong on that.
Well, you may get your wish, man.
Yeah.
Might
don't,
not be the
don't
last
hold your breath.
Those. Yeah.
But yeah, the Riverbenders is sort of the next chapter in my story, anyway. You know, I mean, Honey Island Swamp Band is never going away.
Sure.
Obviously, but you know, the Riverbenders is exciting. It's something that all the members are excited about because we're all in these big, loud, like sort of sprawling bands that have been around forever.
Right.
And it's fun to come together and do something that's kind of
small.
Yeah, kind of a reset.
Precious.
It's like a
Fabergé egg something.
It just doesn't have the same history of, like, you know, I don't want to say egos, but the same history of just like, you know, nobody's necessarily the boss. It's not anybody's band. You know what I mean? It's like sort of like ours.
You don't have any kind of legacy that you're trying.
There's
to
There's not a lot of pressure, and everybody's very easy about it. And you know, maybe it won't always be that way, but I hope it is. And right now, it feels great. And so will be, if I can shamelessly plug, like we're going to be playing at Jazz Fest with the Riverbenders on the first Saturday. Be playing with the Honey Island Swamp Band on the second Saturday. Nice. I mean, God bless Jazz Fest, right? I mean,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like the beacon on the horizon.
Oh yeah, yeah. French Quarter Fest, Jazz Fest. No,
it's also a little bit like the if you're like a flat earther. Like it's the end. It's like
the drop off.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The build up to the letdown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
It's a little bit of that too.
Yeah. You know, there's always something after.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah. There's always something. Yeah.
Well, man, Aaron, I wish you just had some energy that you could bring to the podcast.
But, well, listen,
I know you've done your best.
You asked me to talk, and you might have made a mistake.
I do appreciate. It's been so much fun, man.
Thank you, guys.
Really kicks, man. I love your playing, love your singing, man. It's
same, man. Back at you. I love listening to you guys, man.
Yeah, man. So
it's cool to do this. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. It's been a blast. Trouble Nation knows, as always, in Trouble Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, people.
Well, nothing lasts forever. And life will show you the signs. Looking for a pot of gold.